So everybody, welcome to the City Council chambers. This afternoon we'll be taking testimony on any topic related to the agenda item in front of us. Testimony will be 2 minutes each, and if you haven't signed up, the sign-up sheets are still out front. This is our second hearing on this issue, so please sign up if you want to testify. We're just waiting for copies to be made of the underline and strike out agreement, so copies can be made for folks in the room.
So you're going to go through it page by page. Yeah, that's good.
So it looks like the copying will take another 10 minutes if you want to judge your seating versus restroom versus walking around. But we're not going to start for another 10 minutes.
Hello. Thank you so much. Very excited.
All right, we have some printed copies, and in our continuing efforts to build community, the first batch you're going to have to share. So get close, and more copies will be coming. But if you could share amongst yourself, we're also going to be doing a presentation, and there'll be the changes projected up on the screen above us as well. So, Ms. Harper, if you could please come forward. Hi, Carla. How are you?
Hello. I'm well.
Can you please read the title of the 330 time certain item?
Mm-hmm. Item 1267, authorize the mayor to execute an agreement with the United States Department of Justice Civil Rights Division and the United States Attorney for the District of Oregon regarding changes to policies and procedures in and oversight of the Portland Police Bureau.
So last week, the City Council I didn't do my usual. So how many of you are here in the chambers for the first time? Raise your hand. We're glad you're here. In order to ensure that everyone feels comfortable voicing their point of view, regardless of whether it happens to be the most popular view in the chamber or not, there's no clapping, there's no sound. If you like something, you're welcome to put your thumbs up that somebody's talking about. If you don't like something, you're welcome to put your thumbs down. But the idea is we let everyone feel fully comfortable to testify and finish their testimony. Local law requires that if you are a lobbyist authorized to speak on behalf of a business or an organization, that you need to disclose that at the time that your name is called for testifying here at the table. People will be called in order that they signed up, 2 minutes each, and we call four folks at a time. Under local protocol, you need to keep your comments to the agenda in front of us. In this particular case, it deals with the police, and so any matter dealing with the police or police matters, law enforcement, peacekeeping, that's kind of the general milieu. Ask that you keep it to that. When you come forward, you will the clock in front of you will tell you your countdown time. Sometimes when you're testifying, you look at the clock, you think you have so many minutes left, that's how much time you've used up. And you just give us your first and last name. We do not want your address. We do not want your phone number. We do not want your Twitter account or Facebook account. Just your first and last name. So we're really glad that you're here. Oh, so last week, the City Council considered for the first time the city's proposed agreement with the United States that provides a guide towards new policies and procedures, community oversight and involvement, and reporting requirements that will improve the Portland Police and its approach to serving and responding to the people of Portland, with a special emphasis on those suffering from mental illness and perceived to be suffering from mental illness. In addition to improving relations and improving the trust with Portlanders of color, City of Portland, City Council, and the Department of Justice received constructive testimony, both written and in oral, in this chamber since that time, and we thank you for that. I've consulted with my colleagues. We have been in negotiations with the Department of Justice based on this feedback, and we're going to go through and underline and strike out sort of what those are. But to summarize, for those that are at home and might not have the document in front of you, we heard very clearly from the community that the structure, makeup, and role of the proposed community outreach and advisory board needed to be changed. First thing we did was to have Truth in Advertising, and it's been renamed to the Community Oversight Advisory Board to reflect the role of the board as a community oversight body for this entire agreement. The way that the membership is formed on this board has been changed, and we'll go through that. Our team will go through that. And we made it clear, you'll see that it does not require, it did not intend to, now we've made it very clear, it does not require the dismantling of the Community Police Relations Committee that, among other things, has been working on racial profiling and community relations. We've also made clearer the requirement that individuals, where appropriate, with mental health experience, either professional or personal, need to be included in terms of service on this Community Oversight Advisory Board. The Compliance Officer Community Liaison, also known as the COCL by its acronym, will be a position independent of the confines of a single city bureau or office, and it will report to all of the City Council. It will physically be located in its own offices, likely to be in the Portland building or some other building, but it'll be physically independent, and you'll see that its independence is strengthened in the changes. The Training Advisory Council meetings will be public. That is the wording, and you've heard me talk about that, and the wording in that is made more clear. Medical care. The Police Bureau trains its officers to routinely procure medical care at the earliest opportunity when a subject is injured during a force event. The new version of the agreement makes further refinements to the policies and training regarding this matter. We'll be sharing with you those changes and changes to the Citizen Review Committee process of associated with IPR. We heard that some clarification was needed regarding the CRC, again, the acronym for Citizen Review Committee's ability to request additional investigation on a case before them. This process has been clarified, giving CRC more authority to ask for additional investigation. So what's before the city today is actually amendments to Exhibit A, and you'll see the we'll take testimony, you'll see what the amendments are right now by my introduction of Clay Neal, who serves as the director of the city's, director of the mayor's peacekeeping and police area of policy issues, and Stephanie Harper from the city attorney's out. City attorneys, and more copies will be coming in, and you'll we'll pause, raise your hand if you need a copy. With that, I will turn it over to Ms. Harper. Great.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm Stephanie Harper. I'm a deputy city attorney with the city attorney's office. So what I'm going to do is go through the document and just highlight the pages where there are proposed changes to the document that you reviewed and took testimony on last week. So the first change is on page 19 of the document. There was a provision under the use of force policy. This was just clarified language to make clear that it's in the event of objectively unreasonable uses of force, it shall result in action, either corrective action or and or discipline up to including termination. Before that was a more permissive language of may.
We've got a typo there we'll fix.
And any typos we will fix. Okay. And then the next substantive change is actually on page, jumping to page 31 of the document, paragraph 83. This section overall relates to the Portland Police Bureau's training division, and previously we had some criteria regarding the selection of officers who will serve in the training division as training instructors, and we added one additional criteria that will be taken into account in making those selections, which is if there's been a civil judgment rendered against the city in the last 5 years based on that officer's use of force, and that would be taken into consideration when making that selection decision. The next page, page 32, paragraph 84 at the top of the page. This was a clarification, certainly intended, but we added language to make sure it's clear that any training that is provided at the Portland Police Bureau will conform to the Bureau's current policies at the time of training. Further down in paragraph 84A little 3, or sub, or I, this relates to the medical care provision. So to continue to provide training regarding an officer's duty to procure medical care whenever a subject is injured during a force event, and then enhance and revise that training necessary to ensure that the training is proactive and responsive to deficiencies. There's a reference there to the inspector. As you'll recall, this agreement, well, the Bureau actually already has a force inspector, and the force inspector reviews all use of force reports. And so this ties back into the force inspector. They'll identify areas that need to be caught with training.
Under this agreement, the force inspector is created.
We already have a force inspector. The chief has already imposed that. This continues that structure and then adds further clarification for what the inspector is responsible for, including auditing all the force reports and
related to call for medical care.
Yes, that come up as in the course of force. So they're reviewing; they serve as a check of reviewing all force, in addition to all the other checks we have in place in looking at our force-related events. The next it looks like a substantive change, but it's actually just movement of a paragraph, page 34, paragraph 86. That was actually language we already had. We just moved it to a different location. So I'll move to page 35 of the document, top of the page, paragraph 87. This was just to put into this actual agreement, make part of the agreement, the stated intention of Mayor Adams and the Chief of Police, that the Training Advisory Council meetings will be open to the public unless the matter under discussion is confidential or there are specific public safety concerns as determined by the Chief. Okay. The next change that is substantive in nature on page 50, paragraph 132. So in the document we looked at last week, it said that the police review board, which is part of the internal administrative review process within PPB that makes recommendations to the chief on findings and proposed discipline, the board may request that investigations be returned to complete investigation on certain factual matters that are needed to reach a finding. And this provision just simply, that was already there. What this provision does, the change, is to make sure that, we make reasonable attempts for that additional investigation to be accomplished within 10 business days. And if that doesn't occur, to provide a written statement, why not? So that's to be prompt in responding to that additional investigation request. The next substantive change, page 52, paragraph 136. So the Citizens Review Committee hears appeals, and what this paragraph does, again, we already had language that said CRC may make one additional request for additional investigation. What this makes clear is that that additional investigation will occur. There will only be one request allowed by the CRC, and that request, again, similarly like as the last provision, will need to be turned around within 10 business days, or will make reasonable attempts to do that. There are some parameters around, just to be clear, that one additional request for investigation is that it has to be voted on by a quorum, that the members voting on that request do have to be familiar with the case file in order to make that vote, and that they should prioritize their request in the event there are multiple points that they would like followed up.
But we make clear that they have the ability to request multiple points of additional inquiry.
Within the one request.
Right.
So part of it is just to kind of...
It isn't just one issue.
No. It could be multiple issues, but just one request, and that's really more about just managing. By then, the investigation, there's been a lengthy investigation process typically, so you're really trying to narrow down and make sure you're in charge of your investigative resources and keep them focused, the investigative resources focused. All right, the next... page substantive change, I will move to the COAB. And so let's go to page 54, paragraph 152. So there was a lot of community input. And what the proposal is so as you'll recall, the COAB, the board, Community Oversight Board, it's a 20-member board, 15 members are voting members. The five members that are each individually selected by council, that remains the same. The five members that are selected by the community remains the same. But we are proposing a change in that last five members. Instead of designating the five members who are part of the CPRC, we will actually have the following people be on the board. The chair of the Human Rights Commission will designate somebody to serve on the COAB. The chair of the Portland Commission on Disability will designate one commissioner on disability.
So let me just clarify that the chair of the Human Rights Commission will designate a human rights commissioner, not just somebody.
Oh, designate a human rights commissioner. Excuse me. Yes. And that's right. And then the chair of the Portland Commission on Disability shall designate one commissioner on disability to serve on the board. And then those two chairs will jointly select three community mental health community representatives to serve on the COAB. And there's a process that those two chairpersons will have to follow. We'll solicit and review applications coming from the public. And those three mental health experts should possess expertise in the field of mental health in one of two forms, either certified as a qualified mental health professional or with someone with no less than 10 years of demonstrated service to persons with mental illness. So this captures people with lived experience and the broader community. And those selections are to be completed within 60 days of the COCOL selection.
And I just wanted to clarify, because that was my question to the mayor, that there is a definition of qualified mental health practitioner in the definition section, so it's listed what that means, because there isn't currently a certification. One certification. So,
thank you.
In case anybody else had the same question that I do, it's
okay.
In the definition.
To be consistent with the definitions.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Then the next substantive change is that, starting at the bottom of page 55, and actually the change is at the top of page 56. Part of paragraph 143. So it's made clear that the 15 voting members of the COAB are independent of the city, not city employees. And then also the change is actually to be clear that the COAB may create an executive committee or other subcommittees as appropriate to accomplish the tasks that are designated to COAB under the agreement. The COAB does report to the COCOL, so that allows them to be flexible in how they get their work done. And then the next substantive change is on page 59, letter D. So this is to be clear. Again, we had a lot of community input and wanted to be clear. There's no intention of disrupting the work of the Community Police Relations Committee. They've been doing work in connection with the Portland Police Bureau's plan to address racial profiling, and we want that work to continue.
Raise your hand if you want a copy. Clay Neal's walking around additional copies.
So what this does is this paragraph, it's overall, it's paragraph 146. And part of what the COAB's responsibility is to work to develop a community outreach and engagement plan. And part one component of that plan, then, they have a number of components to consider in developing the plan, including a survey, consulting with the community, and reviewing prior community outreach efforts that have occurred at PPB. So considering input directly from the CPRC is one component of developing that community outreach plan.
And if I could further clarify, I hope
sure.
This is all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back on page 53, it was deleted that the CPRC would be morphed into the new advisory
yes.
board. So the current Citizen Community Police Relations Committee continues as currently under its bylaws under the Human Rights Commission.
That's correct. Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, page 60, paragraph 148. So currently the Portland Police Bureau already collects and is working with the CPRC in analyzing demographic data relating to stops and a variety of other, you know, their police daily police work. And we were trying to figure out a way to, if there's a possibility of trying to enhance that so there's better, more precise, and qualitative data collection. But currently, the Portland Police Bureau is working with I think it's 38 other agencies, in working to develop a new system overall because the system they currently use is outdated. So this provision would actually just make clear that the Bureau will consider enhancements to those data collection efforts and report on those efforts to the DOJ by no later than December 13th, 2013, and provide quarterly updates after that.
And that's really to establish a system that is establish a systemic accountability, not only within the police bureau, but then also with the sheriff's office who runs the jails, and also community corrections, community mental health providers as well.
Okay. Page 64 of the document. This makes clear, it's clarifying language, really, and we removed some language that had to do with placing the office of the community liaison in the Office of Equity. So we've removed that requirement, made it very clear that the COCL is not attached to any one city office. The COCL is directly responsive to City Council and the public and the Department of Justice, and the city will provide administrative support to that person so the duties can be performed under this agreement. So enhancing and making clear that in that independence of that role. The next substantive change is on page 70, paragraph 170. This has to do with the police bureau that they will provide post final drafts of policies that are related to this agreement for public notice and comment prior to finalizing those policies. And that is something that is already occurring and will continue to occur under this agreement. Those are all the substantive changes I have to cover with you.
Great. Let's get right to testimony unless they're initials. All right, Carla.
Sorry. The first four people, please come on up, are Michael Bingham, Rochelle Silver, Loran Keyliner, and Janet Meyer. They'll be followed by Rosa Klein, Ed Blackburn, Austin Raglione, and Floyd Pittman.
Does everybody know what the process is?
To do what?
What we're doing today, what we're doing next week.
Janet Meyer.
I said at the beginning, didn't I? Okay, I think I did. Hi, please begin. Welcome. Hi.
Mike Bingham, I'm back again. Thank you again for letting us talk to you about this. And I want to thank you for clearing up the issue of asking for further investigation for the CRC. That was kind of a real sticking point between us and the Police Bureau and IPR, and I'm glad that's cleared up. I wanted to speak on the appeal window of 21 days for the CRC. The CRC doesn't feel that's reasonable or feasible for a couple reasons. One is there's a lot that has to happen during that appeal process. We have an appeal process advisor that meets with the appellant. We have to review those cases, and right now they're only available to us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, when IPR is open. The majority of our members are working people, work 8 to 5. It's hard for them to get in there. We have to make sure that the police officer has time to review the case, prepare their case if they decide to come. And then we have to determine, when we look at the case, whether further investigation is needed. So we would recommend 60 days for that.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Silver. I'm a member of the Citizen Review Committee also. And in the new DOJ City of Portland proposed agreement, there are several comments about changes for the CRC, but I also want to only talk about one, and that's the 21-day window of the appeals. Members of the Citizen Review Committee talked about this last night, and Michael and I are representing the entire committee, asking respectfully for a reconsideration of that 21 days. We do not feel that we can do a thorough, fair, or just appeal in that short of time. As you know, the CRC is a 9-person, soon to be 11-person, committee of citizen volunteers, and the CRC, as it's currently constituted, has many important duties and responsibilities. Hearing appeals is only one of those responsibilities. The appeal process is a time-intensive process. It requires many steps. It requires reading of the files that sometimes can be this thick, and every word in the file is important. It involves clarifying questions. It involves locating an appeals process advisor, who is also a volunteer, help the appellant to understand the process. And at this time, we require that appeals process advisor meet with the appellant at least twice to help them understand the process and to prepare their case. We then have a case file review with all the CRC members present to make sure that we have all the material we need for the
so
appeal.
Your time is up.
Okay.
I'm not authorized to speak on behalf of the United States, but my impression of this particular issue is that they would review it, but they want us, they'll review it and be willing to make changes, but they want us to start out with looking at trying to meet this measure. I will tell you the police bureau is also other aspects of the review process that now have to be 180 days. In your case, it's 21 or 31 if you ask for additional information. They too are very nervous about being able to make the timelines. We're gonna make a good faith effort at their DOJ's request, but they also said they would be willing to make changes if it's just proven to be impossible. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Lauren Kellyer. I'm a proud mother of a teen activist, Sean Kellyer. I'm here to really urge true independent citizens review board. What we have now is not working. I want to give you some examples of what happens to activist teens. On January 25th, my son on the sidewalk protesting was punched repeatedly by an officer, resulting in bruises. On February 6th, he was arrested at the anti-police brutality march. He was thrown to the ground. My 15-year-old son thrown to the ground with grown large police officers hurting him there. He again on May Day, he was tackled so hard that I have a medical bill. I'd love to show you guys if you want copies, let me know, from him getting tackled by the police so hard that it knocked his shoe off. My biggest fear with my son being an activist isn't that he's going to be arrested. It's that he's going to end up in a body bag from the police. We need true citizen oversight. We need them to be able to have the capability to truly oversight the police, who at this time are out of control. Thank you.
I encourage you to file a complaint. And I also, the office is upstairs.
We filed the complaint.
And I encourage you to also sign up for one of the many opportunities through three committees on this to continue to make sure that reform happens. Thank you. Welcome. You had it right the first time.
I had it right the first time. Hi, my name's Janet Meyer. I'm the interim CEO of HealthShare of Oregon. We are a coordinated care organization that's been formed through the state legislative health reform to serve the Medicaid population in the Tri-County region. We're very excited about the opportunity to work with the City of Portland and the first responders on serving a very vulnerable population that we recognize has additional service needs that aren't currently available in our community. Our approach to this population really is that we build our services around the patient need. We don't build the service and then plug the patients into it. You know, we are newly formed as of September 1, and we are working very hard with all of our partners and stakeholders to assess the needs of this population and assemble the services that they require. The DOJ document has some timelines in it that has us a little concerned because they're a little probably energetic for us to truly be able to achieve, as well as we do need to allow our local capacity to be leveraged, make sure we're maximizing all our existing services to the best of their ability, and we need to build the services around the needs of the patient, and we're working on that assessment, and so we would ask for that additional time.
Again, the DOJ is willing, as again, I don't speak for them, I will tell you that they have a lot of interest on this issue given their parallel study and pointing out a number of failures of the mental health system managed by the state, yes. Of which you are a creation. So I think they're open to being reasonable, but they also want to push you.
And I have a few more seconds left. So we are very lucky at HealthShare because we received an innovation grant from the federal government to do exactly the kind of work that the City of Portland needs for us to do right now, a $17.5 million grant. We're already hiring the interventionist for this grant. That's a big part of it is serving this population. And Rosa Klein will be coming up in the next round to talk about HealthShare's innovation grant and the work we're doing to wrap the services around the population and prevent the need for transport.
So what you're saying is although you're concerned about the timeline, you're already implementing reforms.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Working at the speed of change.
Thank you all very much. And I do appreciate your leadership. You've been great to work with.
Thank you.
Next four are Rosa Klein, Ed Blackburn, Austin Raglione, and Floyd Pittman. And they'll be followed by Inga Fisher-Williams, Alan Lazo, Dr. T. Allen Bethel, and Ashley Albies.
Welcome. Glad you're here. Would you like to begin?
Sure. I have some handouts for you if you'd like.
Carla will be. If you have handouts for us, you just you can give them to Carla as you walk up to the desk. I forgot to mention that. She'll make sure as soon as you start talking or soon thereafter, she'll come up and give them to us. So glad you're here.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I'm Rosa Klein with HealthShare of Oregon. And as you know, we've been working diligently to kickstart some of our work around healthcare transformation, particularly around the needs of people with severe persistent mental illness and alcohol and drug abuse. Janet kind of alluded to the introduction of the grant initiatives, and I'm just going to run through three of the initiatives that we're starting that we believe will help to mitigate the need for police intervention and for the intervention of first responders in the City of Portland. These are really a kickstart to the entire care transformation efforts, and there will be more that is built off of this. Right now, the laser focus of our organization is on the 10 to 20% of HealthShare members who are frequently using the emergency room and other acute care services when they could be seen in a more appropriate settings. And we believe that it's very synchronistic, the work that we're doing and the work that that you're being asked to do by the Department of Justice there will be synchronicity there. So the three grant initiatives that we are beginning are outreach. There's a significant amount of outreach workers that are being hired, one around mental health transitions, and then emergency department navigators. And I've given you those three sheets that describe each of the grant initiatives. The outreach work, is that my 2 minutes? The outreach work is reaching out to adults who have six or more emergency department visits or one inpatient hospital admission in a year They can be referred by somebody in the community, by their provider, or identified by insurance claims data. And the outreach worker will work with them to get them connected to primary care, to a mental health provider if they're not already seeing a community mental health provider, social services, housing, food, all the things that we know keep people stable and from destabilizing. The Mental Health Initiative is working with high acuity patients with mental health and substance abuse needs who have been hospitalized for a psychiatric reason or who have been in the emergency department for a mental health issue. And this is really to provide wraparound services for folks who are coming out of the hospital so that they have what they need in the meantime before they have their first appointment with a community mental health provider. So they may need housing, they may need food, they may need other resources to keep them stable, medication, until they have their first appointment, and basically shepherd them from their hospital situation and to the community mental health provider.
So you're out of time. If people want to see this, what's a website that they can visit?
It's www.healthcommonsgrant.com.
www.healthcommonsgrant.com. Thank you. And I want to also, part of my optimism for HealthShare to meet the mid-2013 deadline is the fact you started this a month ago, 2 months ago.
We started writing the grant about a year ago, but we were received funds in about 2 months ago.
Yeah, so thank you. Welcome.
Ed Blackburn. So I will say that I haven't had time to review the agreement in a lot of detail, but going over it and skimming through it and focusing on a few places, I would say that the mayor and Commissioner Saltzman are to be congratulated for bringing the DOJ in and inviting them in, actually, and going through a very rigorous process. And I think it demonstrates a real effort to do the right thing. It's not always easy to figure out what that is. So you're getting into territory in terms of the mobile crisis units, the specialized crisis intervention, perhaps a crisis triage center, that is really in the world where a quality improvement and assurance mechanisms really need to be in place, and a goal with safety of people and making sure what we're doing is effective. So there are elements in the framework of the DOJ agreement, such as the oversight functions and some of the other committees that have been set up that can act that way, but the metrics and the quality improvement processes need to be involved in anything where you've got safety of people and their health care or their mental health care at stake. So I would like to recommend more coordination with the county and those institutions that have a lot of practice in those areas. Area hospitals, for example, have done a lot of work around quality improvement and clinical safety. So I think that would be wise for the city, as you get into these types of services, that you have a system where there's constant reporting and transparency about what the results of that is. The last thing is involving officers and what in our world is called a just culture reporting system, where people have some confidence that they can bring issues forward where they know things aren't working as well as they should, or there are too many incidents occurring that could be avoided, that they could bring these incidents forward without any kind of fear of retribution, and they have the confidence that things will be addressed. So I think it's great to have citizen oversight, it's great to have medical oversight, clinical oversight, but I think officers need to be part of this mix on the quality improvement.
So one of the things that the CCO, HealthShare Oregon, has talked about, and we're going to help facilitate its creation as a subcommittee that will seek to weave together not just the city and the county, but community service providers, sort of building on the work of Safer PDX and other work, and make sure that kind of quality oversight, control, and safety are there. So well said, and we appreciate it. Ms. Raglione.
Good afternoon. My name is Austin Raglione. I am the program manager for the Service Coordination Team, which is a program run by the Portland Police Bureau. We work with chronic offenders who have decades of homelessness, decades of drug addiction, years of incarceration, and most of them have had some sort of mental health diagnosis. So our client population is the population that the DOJ was talking about in the report. And I just want to talk a little bit about what our program does. We have specialized treatment and housing for our clients. And we really focus on the four issues that our clients are struggling with, and that is criminality, drug addiction, homelessness, and mental health. And we provide a very specialized treatment service that really helps them stabilize and find a way to stay clean and sober. We have treated, we have worked with 426 different people in the last 3.5 years. Up to this date, we have had 87 people graduate a treatment program through the service coordination team. We will have 14 more people graduate next Friday here in council chambers, bringing our total to 101. Now, what I find really interesting about this and quite impressive is that out of the 87 people who have graduated our program over the last 3.5 years, 53 of those are clean and sober today. That is 61%. That is an astonishing figure, and it beats any national number by far. So what I want to say about the DOJ agreement is this. The DOJ agreement recognizes the work of this program, and it seeks to find permanent funding for this program. We have had to go through the every year uncertainty of whether or not we were going to be able to continue services or not. So we're very pleased to see that there's permanent funding hopefully attached to this. The other thing this, can I go on for just one few more minutes? 30 seconds. Okay. There is also a creation of an addictions and mental health unit in the police bureau, which I think is extremely important for us to start merging the work that we do with people with mental illness and addiction. I think that's extremely important. I will also say that the process that was used to bring everyone to the table to begin the partnership to really find long-term solutions is really incredibly important. I have brought with me Floyd Pittman. He is a graduate of our program. He currently is on the president's list at PCC, which means he has a 4-point GPA. This is after over 100 arrests and 15 years incarcerated.
Mr. Pittman, welcome. It's great to see you.
How you doing? My name is Floyd Pittman. I don't know. All I can say is the program has really saved my life. A lot of us downtown who, you know, I've been down there over 30-some years and quite a few arrests, but this program has allowed me to not only address my chemical addiction but also my mental issues. And, you know, I can't say enough for it. I probably would be dead. And I know that one thing about it is that during those 30 years that I've been down here, I've become really good friends with a lot of the police officers. Even though they arrested me a lot, I felt, as I look back at it, they were saving my life. You know, I mean, I can say a lot of things, but if you haven't been through it, if you haven't experienced being down there homeless, on drugs, you know, halfway crazy, and wanting to hurt society, you would never understand if you haven't experienced it. I've experienced it, and by the grace of this program and just recovery, you know, today I can say that it really works. It worked for me, and I've been to, like, over 30 programs. I would just hope that window would remain open because a lot of us didn't see a way out, you know, so we would walk around downtown forever. We just didn't think there would be a way out of that. And this program has given me a way to have a life today. Yeah, my grades are pretty good, without a doubt. But, you know, it's more about what the program has given me. It's given me a focus that I can actually believe in myself. I care about myself. And, I haven't broken the law in over close to 4 years now. So that's important for me. And Mr. Reese is over there. Thank him. He's a good guy. So I'm just happy to be here.
Mr. Pittman, your efforts and your accomplishments are truly inspiring, and because I apparently have this authority, you're going to get a round of applause now, so thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We'll take four more.
Are Inga Fisher-Williams, Alan Lazo, Dr. T. Allen Bethel, and Ashley Albies. And they'll be followed by Jan Friedman, Dan Handelman, Joanne Hardesty, and Greg Kafori.
Welcome. Glad you're here. Would you like to begin?
Yes. Inga Fisher-Williams. I am a member of the Elder Caucus Occupy Portland. The comments are my own. You are to be congratulated individually and as a council to take on the serious issue again. We've been here before as a city at an inflection point where substantive change in the culture of the Portland Police Bureau seems possible. We urge you to take the tough stands to make it happen. While we thank you for having begun this urgent task, we wish you had not kicked the can down the road by failing to include in the proposed agreement an independent civilian authority that could make implementation real and binding. We have no faith in internal controls. They have been tried, and they have failed us. We have eagerly awaited the US DOJ report and its recommendations. We urge that the implementation guidelines will include the formation of a civilian independent review authority with sufficient power to have real influence. No doubt, there are many dedicated, thoughtful, and excellent officers in the Portland Police Bureau. Its organizational culture, however, has been tainted by a police association which appears to reflexively defend any and all conduct. It cannot be counted on to police itself. This we have witnessed. Transformational change rarely comes from the inside, and the community has voiced its concerns about the police oversight for many years. You should not duck your responsibility to have a process that is free of political and bureaucratic interference. Following the conventional wisdom, more funds, more officers, the proposed agreement with the city is a halfway step that plays up remedies with a focus on the mentally ill. Urgent, no doubt, and the most visible sign of the problem. But the excessive use of force against this part of the city's population is only the tip of the iceberg. The real problem is larger. We believe a key ingredient in this compromised culture is its disregard.
I need you to wrap up.
The disregard for the marginalized, the disenfranchised, and the powerless, whether it's the homeless, the racial minorities, LGBT community, protesters for economic equity, or women in the past.
Thank you. Just to be, it's a fine point, but for example, the use of force, building on the tougher use of force policies that we have, that applies to all interactions of the police bureau, not just interactions with those that are perceived as suffering from mental health issues. Same with the taser, and those two protocols are still out for public comment, but it's a distinction that really matters, and I just wanted to make sure you knew that use of force, the new tougher, even tougher use of force policies applies all the time.
Thank you. I will leave a copy of my complete remarks with your recorder.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Alan Lazo. I am the immediate past chair of the Portland Human Rights Commission.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for the opportunity to serve. I appreciate that. And I'm coming here authorized last night's vote by the Human Rights Commission in a unanimous vote of the full board. The HRC adopted the recommendations that were sent to the mayor, to each of you, and to the DOJ. And we did see the revisions that you made, so we do appreciate having the opportunity to provide input and see that some of the points made it in there. So I'll use part of my time to bring forward the points that we brought forth as a way of talking about my real point. So we talked in the recommendations that we made, we had kind of two or three major ones. For instance, we talked about the makeup of the COAB, which originally had started as five CPRC members coming over to the COAB. Our proposal was that it be three Human Rights Commission members and two PCOD members. That now is one Human Rights Commissioner and one PCOD member. We talked about we asked you to write the CPRC more fully into the agreement, and I see that you've included us in paragraph 145, but not too much more than that. And the point I'll make, I guess, is that it's one of the points we made earlier in our testimony around how the kind of the gumbo making of legislation and settlement has to occur. And we certainly understand that and respect that. The timeline for this has been very quick. You know, we've had folks that have been working quite diligently on it over the last week to bring forward what we did to you. And we understand that there are many, many perspectives. But if you think you've got it right at this point, imagine another 7 days, another 14 days of being able to look at what else is out there, what else we could do to better serve this community. And so I would encourage you to look at this as the beginning of that process. If you think you're going to get to a vote next week, think of it as the beginning of using that community to leverage the expertise and the talent that's out there and not the end of that process just because we're going into the agreement at this point. Thank you.
I think that's a really important point, and this is, it depends on what the council does, but the earliest a vote could happen would be next week. And I do think reminding folks that this is a the very beginning of a process, and I will tell you, having sat in the negotiations with DOJ, and we have a very committed U.S. Attorney for Oregon, they're not going anywhere, and they really do expect the results we all expect. So, Doctor.
Good evening, Dr. Chow and Bethel, President of the Albino Minister Alliance, Vice Chair of the Albino Minister Alliance, Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. We've come again today, and you have a copy of the material that we have sent before and another copy in your hands today to talk basically about the process. We do want to commend you for what you have done and you are continuing to do, but we do want to see the process become more transparent, public, and open with community engagement. And when we talk about community engagement, we also want to urge you to not introduce or continue any policies that will continue to make our community fearful of the police bureau or the police association, or vice versa, where the officers are fearful of the community and may be tempted or moved to react quicker with some type of overuse of force and then rely on the, at most, the very negligent accountability process that we have for our officers and our bureau and our association. So the United States Department of Justice and the City of Portland Agreement must be written in a way that encourages and allows more changes that are included in the current draft without concern that such changes would distract from or be considered violations of the agreement. This is true for policies, training, oversight mechanisms, and just about every aspect in the agreement. We also want you to know that the agreement needs to include more remedies designed to improve the way the Portland police interact with communities of color. The suggestions below, which you have a copy of, are just minimum changes that we would like to ask you to consider and seek before this agreement can and should move forward. Thank you for your continued work on this. We're very glad that the process is at its beginning stages, but we do hope that we will bear in mind all of the things that have happened over the years. If I must take you all the way back, and I know this is talking about what has happened to mental health, but let's go all the way back to the Possum incident. Let's go all the way back to don't choke them, let's smoke them, and take a real look at seeing this is a moment that we can make changes for our city, our community, and the associations. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you, City Council. My name is Ashley Albies. I'm co-chair of the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, and I also sit on the steering committee of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. We are also, the National Lawyers Guild has been part of police accountability work in Portland for many, many years. We welcome the DOJ investigation and its findings, and with the hope that true reform sought for decades by members of the Portland community would come to fruition. We were a part of the coalition group of organizations that submitted specific comments and recommendations to the city and the DOJ on September 27th of 2012, and we want to reiterate our support for those recommendations. They get to specifics on a level that this agreement is not quite as specific as those recommendations, and we hope to see many of those recommendations incorporated into the actual implementation of this agreement. Specifically, I just want to make a comment on a few specific areas. In use of force, we strongly advocate that the use of force policy be revised to require the use of the least, to require the least amount of force use necessary to achieve a lawful objective, and that training gets the whole Bureau up to speed as that being the actual standard that's being employed. In terms of the training, we want to advocate that members of the community have a real and definable role in developing the training, not just an advisory role on giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but actually participating in the actual training and developing the core curriculum of that training, because we think community members most affected by these policies should have a tremendous amount of say in how the policies are being implemented. I also want to note with the choice of the trainers, the revision that was made to paragraph 83 states that in addition to disciplinary action for when choosing trainer selection guidelines, it's also taken into account civil judgment has been rendered. And I would also advocate for whether there's a tort claim or specific types of excessive complaints being made. For example, there was no judgment against the city in the Chassis case. So under these terms, Chris Humphreys, who's now the chair of the sheriff-elect in Wheeler County, could be a trainer under the way that this policy is written. I know that's not likely, but it still is something that is possible, and we want to raise that. With regard to medical attention, we think that the specific recommendations that we made should be delineated as to when medical attention should be given. And my time is up, so thank you for the chance to testify.
Just for my education, I mean, we are, the phrase used is no use of force is no greater than necessary to accomplish a lawful objective, and again, reiterated, shall only use force necessary under the totality of circumstances to lawfully perform its duties and to resolve confrontations effectively and safely. So maybe you can scratch me a note and tell me what the difference between what you're suggesting.
I most certainly will.
Great. Thanks so much.
Mayor,
appreciate it.
Just before this panel, I wonder if you could response to Dr. Bethel and to the community, because I asked a similar question in terms of the compliance officer, the relationship between the city council, the court, if the compliance officer and the advisory board feel that the city is not doing what it should do, what happens?
So the and you can by this answer to your question. So this individual is independent and will be hired and whose performance will be monitored by the city council directly. Independent offices, independent staff, working closely with COAB, the Community Oversight Board. There are a lot of implementation details, and there would be this is a policy level body. And that individual is going to be very focused on that and making sure that the input from the Community Oversight Advisory Board is also consulted on that. So this is truly a beginning of the effort, and it is not a court appointed, but it is a city council appointed and monitor, and they will have regular reports directly to the city council. And if the city council is not satisfied with their performance, can be removed by a public vote only of a majority of the city council.
But the paragraph that's in the page on page 64 says that the compliance officer will be responsive to the entire city council, the public, and the Department of Justice. So if the compliance officer, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, believes that the council is not doing the things that should be done, then they go back to the court. Is that right? Correct? They
correct.
Have the authority.
And to be clear, in every city where this has happened, the Department of Justice continues to monitor compliance against this agreement. They are the final decision makers of that. This agreement puts in place a series of mechanisms and community involvement and expert involvement so that as we move into implementation, that it is done in a transparent way. But it is, and the COCL's job is to report to the City Council and to DOJ. DOJ can decide at any time that this gets reviewed and this gets changed, or they're not happy with the city's performance. So for those reasonable people can disagree, having been in the building for 18 years, that's never happened before. And you're right. It's a fragile opportunity to make real change. It isn't guaranteed, but it also is a unique opportunity to make change. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
The next four?
Next four are Daryl Walker, Maggie Bennington Davis, Jan Friedman, and Dan Handelman. Then they'll be followed by Joanne Hardesty, Greg Kafori, Jason Kafori, and Ben Berry.
Hi, welcome. Mr. Handelman, would you like to begin?
I'd like to follow Ms. Friedman, if that's all right.
Yeah. Ms. Who? Hi, Ms. would Friedman. You like to begin?
Hi. Sure. My name is Jan Friedman. I'm an attorney with Disability Rights Oregon, which is the protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities in our state. I also have been part of the Albina Ministerial Alliance. I've been part of the Portland Police Bureau's Crisis Intervention Team Advisory Board since 1999. As such, I am appreciative of the DOJ's investigation. I'm appreciative of its findings, and I'm appreciative of the efforts that have been made. But the agreement, in order to be effective, there needs to be a new police culture. My first point is Portland police officers must engage people with disabilities as human beings rather than problems. Specifically, the training needs to show Portland police officers how to interact with people with disabilities rather than dealing with them. There needs to be requests and allowance of input from people with disabilities before Portland Police Bureau decisions are made and policies are set, so that they're not an after the fact, oh, we're going to invite you as to what happened, but more part of the process, listen to, and actually have their information be heard.